Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the October 20th, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being provided telephonically for access by the public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the participation staff to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers. This meeting is being held in person with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on the RA Housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we'll stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Vice Chairman James Thorson will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak, please state your name each and every time prior to speaking. Mr. Vice Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson. I'd like to call this meeting to order, and the current time is 9:32 a.m. Carol, would you please conduct a roll call attendance of the Board of Commissioners?
Certainly. Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Designee Cabral.
Here.
Commissioner Saul.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Carol. It's Jim Thorson. I'd like to introduce Board Action Number 1, which is approval of the minutes of the Board meeting held on September 15, 2022. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion.
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
I'll second. Steve?
We have Jim Thorson. We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, Corinne, would you please conduct a vote on the motion?
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on September 15th, 2022, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again. For the remarks today, I'm going to pause and just take a second to welcome everybody here. We have a presentation that Carol will be covering this morning on interest rates, so I don't want to take any more time than that. So with that, Carol, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you. And I'm going to turn it over to Tara, who will be making this presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Carol Ashwell. So we all know that the Federal Reserve has been increasing their interest rates pretty steadily since March of this year. What they're trying to do is make borrowing more expensive to reduce spending and hopefully curb inflation. All of the lending that we do here at Rhode Island Housing is extremely rate sensitive, so any change in rates has a very big impact on our customers and on Rhode Island Housing's income as well. The primary way that we finance our single-family and multifamily loans is through the issuance of tax-exempt mortgage revenue bonds. These bonds are private activity bonds, and they're subject to the volume cap that we receive from the state for the tax exemption. We're limited in what we can earn on those bonds, and the example on the first slide, the spread, which is the income to us, is 1.8%. That's on a single-family bond. The bonds, it's much more complex when you're issuing bonds in terms of assumptions around prepayment fees and cash flow analysis. And when you issue bonds, the loans that you buy with those bonds stay on our balance sheet. So they're still an asset to us, and we earn income over time. So it's over the life of the loan. Tax-exempt bonds are priced off of a municipal index. It's not directly tied to the Fed funds rate, but any change in the Fed funds rate impacts all the other rates. The other way that we purchase loans is that we fund the loans through selling or through selling mortgage-backed securities in the secondary market. We sell directly to Fannie and Freddie. We package the loans into MBS and with Ginnie Mae and send the, sell those in what's known as the TBA market, the 2B analysis market. When we do that, the loans are not on our balance sheet. Our risks of loss are much less, and we are not using tax-exempt volume caps, so it's an alternative when we're constrained by volume caps. Usually, the rates on these loans are slightly higher because it's a taxable product. We receive our income up front. It's one-time income when we sell the product, sell the loan. We don't get that ongoing annuity over the life of the loan. And typically, the investors would pay more for our type of loan. They like a low-balance loan, and loans that have DPA because there's some assurance around how long that's going to be outstanding. However, with the increase in interest rates, the secondary market has really become inefficient. The volatility in the market and just the unknown of where interest rates are going to go has really made investors not comfortable in the assumptions, and so they have not been interested in purchasing our loans, or really the whole secondary market has changed since interest rates have begun. And so for us, we're going to have to rely much more on issuing bonds to finance our loans, but we do have that option to do either one. Slide four shows our historical mortgage production. So from 2016 to 2023, the blue section is the loans for MBS that have been sold in the TBA or secondary market. The green section are the loans that are held in our portfolio, in our bond portfolio. If you look at fiscal year 23, that's budgeted numbers. We're definitely expecting to sell less in the TBA market, so less one-time income, and much more in the municipal market and the bond market, so we'll have that income over time as an annuity. The bond market is very sensitive to the increase in interest rates. And on page five, we show a comparison of how the Fed funds rate compares to the municipal index and Rhode Island Housing's mortgage rate. So the red line at the bottom is the Fed funds rate, and we can see how it's increasing pretty steadily since March and expected to continue to increase. The green line is the municipal index, and that's where our bonds price off of. The yellow line is Rhode Island Housing's average mortgage rate, and the blue line is the national 30-year FHA mortgage rate. So you can see they all increase, not exactly the same as the Fed funds rate, but that certainly is the impetus for all the other increases. We have been able to keep our rate slightly below market. You'll see our rate below the blue line. But it is becoming more and more difficult. We do that to try and assist the customers as much as we can, but in this increasing rate environment, it's becoming more difficult for us to do that. Slide six talks about the loss of purchasing power. So this is very much the impact to our customers. If we look at September of last year, our average loan amount was $267,000. That's a tax-exempt loan amount. And the interest rate was 3%. So that customer would have to pay just over $1,100 in monthly PMI. It would also be insurance and PMI insurance and then tax and insurance for escrow. If that's all the customer could afford, $1,100 monthly, in this environment, the interest rate is 6 1/8. They would only be able to borrow $185,000. So it's an immediate loss of purchasing power of $82,000. And that doesn't include the increases in home prices. And while we think that has stabilized and we're hoping it might come down a little bit, it's been significant, especially in Rhode Island. It's very similar on the multifamily side. Our rate last year from at this time, multifamily, was 4.05%. An average tax-exempt loan may have been $10 million, and their debt service would have been $48,000. So that same debt service of $48,000 in today's interest rate environment only allows a loan of $7.9 million. So again, there's an instant gap in the financing for these multifamily deals, and they don't really have the option to reduce a lot of their costs. In fact, construction costs have increased and other inflationary costs have increased. And so that's some of the struggles that our multifamily properties are having right now. So slide 7 is actually our current bond that we're working on. Actually, today we're in the market. And this is showing just what the difference has been in the last 2 months since we've been working on this bond transaction. It was a single-family bond transaction, approximately $100 million of tax-exempt bonds and some additional taxable bonds as well. The top blue section represents the mortgage yield. So it's not a spot mortgage rate, but it's the weighted average coupon of all the loans that will go into that bond. Starting at the beginning of August, that was around 4.5 through the end of September, and now into October, it's about 5.5. The middle section shows the bond yield, or what we'll have to pay our investors for those bonds. And then the blue section at the bottom is the tax-exempt spread. So that is what Rhode Island Housing will make as income over the life of those bonds. So you can see the decrease, especially in the spread to Rhode Island Housing, the increase in the rates to the customers, so they're getting squeezed on both ends. The next page just highlights that tax-exempt spread to show at the beginning of August where we started. We started at 0.7% or 70 basis points. Now remember, for a single family bond, we're allowed to make 1.8%. So we're making approximately half by the end of September, and now into October, we will most likely make 0.55% or 55 basis points. So, every percentage point counts, and not only for us, but also for the customers. And so it's a balance of, do we increase the rates to the customer? Are we able to take a smaller spread for our income? That way, the burden is not fully on the customers. So we've talked about some of the challenge to our customers in terms of purchasing power for the first-time home buyers, the gap financing that is needed for the multifamily development deals to get done, and then lower income for housing as well. But there are ways to mitigate it. We will continue to try and offer below market interest rates where we can. Our bond resolutions are strong. We work with our rating agencies to make sure that they're financially sound for the future. So if there is an ability to take a lower spread, we will do that for the customers. The state has made a great investment in housing, and so that will be a great help to our customers, especially with down payment assistance and with the soft debt programs on the multifamily side. And then I think for Rhode Island Housing, it's just a continual management of our budget, of our expenses, our financing, to make sure that we are maximizing what we can do for the customers, maximizing the programs that we can offer while still meeting our financial goals for the future. So I know that went a little fast, but happy to answer any questions.
If I could just add one thing. Despite all of the challenges in the homeownership market in Rhode Island, we had a record month in September. So it's to folks' ability to still access the market and to buy a home. Some of that has to do with, I think, the $25,000 first-gen down payment assistance program that we're offering, and I believe we're going to add additional funding into that program, additional $1 million into that program to support the first-gen down payment. So there is some good news in that.
Kara, it's Jim Thorson. Earlier this week, the state issued its GO bonds at around 4% on a 20-year obligation. When I say 4%, you'd have to go out several basis points to get to.
Beating
that. So it was basically 4%. Can you talk, because we've had a discussion at this table before where we've talked about the appropriate sizing in light of market conditions and making a judgment call as to how much of your authority you should issue and what the prospects look like for today's bond sale?
So, you know, we are looking at what our production is. So we know we've got customers in the pipeline who are ready to close loans, and what we've got to do is decide, is that going to be a tax-exempt product? Do we have enough volume cap from the state? The tax-exempt product would allow us to have lower interest rates, or the taxable product that we would sell into the secondary market. We're a little constrained now on that taxable product because it's just an inefficient market. So we continue to look at the rates. Really increasing or decreasing our mortgage rate is going to impact our production immediately. You can see as soon as we, you know, drop the rate, the production is up. All the registrations go up. So there are, as Carol mentioned, there are still customers out there who can qualify. It may not be the exact same customer that was qualifying, you know, previously at a 3% rate. So that's really how we are sizing the bonds. It's based on the production that we have available and what we think our future needs are going to be.
So approximately what size are we talking about today?
This one's $100 million for tax exempt and then another $15 million, $15 to $20 million in taxable.
Thank you.
This is Kevin Orth. I have a question off of Jim's. So I guess what is the worst case, that we borrow the $100 million and then we just don't put that out in single family loans?
So when you're issuing the bonds, the bond attorneys and investors as well want to make sure that you've got that collateral. So you usually have to make sure you're at least 50 to 60% already registered into that bond. And so you take into account what your fallout rate is going to be. And usually it will take us 3 months or so to use up those funds. The worst case scenario is that it takes us longer. And so we're already paying interest on those bonds and not collecting the interest yet from the customers.
So we have a subscription rate, if you will, of 50 to 60%. So we're
yes.
40 to 50 million potentially, maybe that.
Yeah, we might be a little bit higher already on this one. We delayed the sale a little bit based on the CPI index that came out last week and just, you know, some of the other financial things going on.
Okay. I have another question.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Peter's not here, or maybe he's on a call. What's the buyer the borrower profile, I say, now with this increase in rates? Who is still able to kind of afford this home in today's market?
Yeah, so when we issue the bonds, we do disclose information about our borrowers. So for this bond issue, we went back about 2.5 years, almost 3 years, and we're still lending to about 70% of our lending is done to individuals at 80% or below. We are seeing that number, though, decrease a little bit. So when we issued a bond last year, that might have been 73% of our lending. So now it's 69% or 70%. So we are seeing a little bit different profile of the customers that we're lending to. Still affordable, still within all the guidelines, but slightly higher income.
We changed our credit screening criteria or anything else?
We haven't. I think who we sell to with Fannie or FHA, they have their own criteria. And I think based on our experience in underwriting, you know, we do a pretty good job of understanding the client profile, what their credit looks like, what their debt to income looks like. And so we haven't made any specific changes there.
Thank you.
questions on that. Last question. What are the FHA, Josh speaking, what are the FHA requirements on credit score profile and kind of the buyers, and how much risk are we? We're at least doing that as the minimum, right? If you can just explain what we require versus the FHA.
Sure. So there is not a set credit score for FHA. They have kind of a model that they put all the information into, the credit score, debt to income ratios, past history of rental payments or mortgage payments. So there's not a set credit score. For us, our credit score typically is 660. So for an FHA loan, we are 100% insured. And so if there is any loss, FHA will reimburse us 100% for the principal of that mortgage.
And just a couple other questions. In terms of the, it's great to learn that the first generation down payment assistance program is being extended, and we are putting, or Rhode Island Housing is putting more funding into it. For the down payment assistance program that the state is funding through the state fiscal recovery funds, there's statutory language that maxes it out at $17,500. So it would be great to understand, I think, from the state's perspective, since that's $30 million over the next 3 years and I think $10 million budgeted this year, how that will impact the overall output and the outcomes of how many people we can help and how much purchasing power has been lost due to the increase in interest rates, right? When that was passed, I think mortgage rates were about 4.5%. Now we're seeing 6.5%. So it's a key thing to keep in mind and to understand if the state needs to change any of that statutory language to make sure that the program is still as powerful and still reaching the customers that it needs to reach.
We can look at reservations and volume that we've had over probably the past 6 months and use that to project, but it's of course going to be an estimate, and it's not the only predictor of what that down payment assistance will, what opportunities that will create. You know, it's sales prices of property, turnover of properties, what goes on to the market. A lot of that impacts it as well. But we'll project something out and provide that data for you.
Great. I just had one or two more questions. On the multifamily side, I was just wondering the effects of rates and intersection with LIHTC pricing. If there is a relationship or not, or what, how we foresee that, if that's going to offset any of the loss of purchasing power on these multifamily bonds.
I don't know what you mean by purchasing power.
So, get like 90 cents right now for tax, and on slide, you know, what was it? On slide 6. Just on the multifamily,
mm-hmm.
The loan amount being $10 million, now basically $7.9 million, and some of that has to be made up perhaps through more soft
money, yes.
In terms of the LIHTC pricing, though, what's the market right now, and do you see that going up or down, or how does that intersect with these interest rates?
I don't think we've seen any wholesale reduction.
No.
And a lot of the, I think, much of the relationship between investors is driven by the nonprofits and their stability and their financial worth and how they manage their properties. But I don't believe we've seen any.
No, a lower mortgage is really not of tremendous interest to the investor, because they know as long as they're not being asked to contribute extra equity. And some deals they are willing and able to do that, but for the most part it's made up by soft money and it doesn't affect what they're pricing at.
Yeah.
So in other words, the tax credit pricing has been pretty constant, and we
yes.
expect that to be
mm-hmm.
Constant.
In Rhode Island, yes, the country, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just add, I think that it's unfortunate, though, as interest rates go up, it makes it harder on a deal, but also the higher interest rates are competition for tax credits, right? So if the risk-free rate is at 5%, then the yield on a tax credit investment has to go up, which means the pricing has to come down. So I think that there's some pressure probably in the market, but we might have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
And soft funds, you know, I think, you know, come save the day.
Yes, definitely.
But
sorry, Jim Thorson, but isn't it true, Kara, that rising interest rates after the bond issue is okay? It's lowering interest rates that are not okay.
Yes.
And we're not competitive anymore.
That's true. And typically, you know, we would have an advantage over those higher taxable rates using tax-exempt bonds. The spread between a tax-exempt rate and a taxable rate is not as large as we would like it. It's about 50 basis points right now. So we don't necessarily have that advantage. And when rates start to come down, that spread will most likely squeeze in even more.
Yeah.
Just one more question, if that's okay, on the graph comparing, it's on slide 5. Could you just explain the relationship between the Rhode Island housing rate and, say, the FHA rate or the Fed funds? Why might one like increasing more quickly versus the other? And if it's not a, I know you mentioned it's not a direct relationship, but just to for us to understand.
Sure. So the Fed funds rate is a short-term rate. It's a rate that financial institutions use to borrow. If as that increases, it will eventually impact the long-term rate. Right now, the yield curve is inverted. What that means is the long-term rate, that a 30-year rate, is lower than the short-term rate, that's a 2- or 10-year rate. And so, as I said, it's not an exact science, and our tax-exempt rates come off of a municipal index, a little bit different than the Fed rate, which is taxable, but it certainly influences the whole market and just impacts mortgages across the board.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Do we have any more questions? Kara, I want to thank you for this presentation. It's very helpful. And it's Jim Thorson again. We are on to board action number 4, and this is the approval of external charitable donations and contributions, for which we'll have James Comer, our Deputy Executive Director, to present committee action number 4.
Good morning. This is James Comer. We have two charitable contributions / donations this month. The first is for House of Hope's Celebration of Hope event, which occurred on September 14th. And was attended by Jessica Mowry and myself and Commissioner Byrne as well. And it's a celebration of the great work that House of Hope does with individuals experiencing homelessness, and honored some of our partners for all the contributions that they make to that effort. And that was in the amount of $150. And the next is for Housing Works of Rhode Island's annual Factbook release. The Housing Works Factbook is kind of a state of affordable housing in Rhode Island that they produce every year. It's a great resource. And they release that every year at an event that's taking place next Friday, October 28th. And Ann Berman and Carol Ventura will be attending at a cost of $100.
Okay. Jim Thorson, do I have a motion to approve committee action number 4? Please state your name.
This is Steve. I'll make a motion to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
And I second.
Great. Do we have any discussion or questions?
This is Leanne. I just want to make a quick comment that I was at the event, but I paid my own way. So
that is
I didn't. I wanted to
true fact.
Clarify that this is not approving my ticket.
Thank you, Leanne. Can we have a vote on the motion, please?
Certainly. This is Commissioners, all those in favor of approving external charitable donations and contributions as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. This brings us to board action number 5, which is the firm approval of financing for 50 Washington Square in Newport. And James Comer will present board action number 5.
Good morning, James Comer again. As some of you heard at the trust meeting, 50 Washington Square is a historic building in the center of downtown Newport, built in 1911 as the Army-Navy YMCA. It was developed as affordable housing in 1988 as part of our first 9% tax credit transaction by Church Community Housing, and was subsequently refinanced in 2004. Now we are at the end of the second 15-year compliance period. The building contains 93 apartments subsidized with project-based vouchers or Section 8 mod rehab subsidies through the McKinney-Vento program, and it also houses the 41-bed McKinney Cooperative Emergency Shelter and several other nonprofit commercial tenants. This came before the board for approval in February of 2022. Since then, there have been a couple changes. Construction costs have increased. The permanent loan has increased by about $1.6 million. National Equity Fund made an additional equity contribution of $1.4 million to offset that. And the site will no longer go through a RAD 2 conversion because it would have triggered Davis-Bacon wages and exacerbated the impact of the construction cost. The rehab scope is comprehensive, a new HVAC system, new boilers, new roof, extensive exterior masonry repairs, window upgrades, and installation of solar panels. Borrower is asking to transfer the limited partnership interest prior to closing to facilitate this acquisition, and all the related seller loans will roll over to the new partnership. This request is for the firm approval of a $13.5 million tax-exempt construction loan, of which $4.2 million will remain as permanent debt, and a loan from the Capital Magnet Fund program in the amount of $750,000. We are seeking firm approval of those loans and the LP transfer with this action. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, James. It's Jim Thorson, and with that, I'd like to request a motion to approve board action number 5.
This is Kevin Morris, so moved.
This is Steve, I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have discussion on this?
Like this is...
Go ahead. You no, you first.
Okay. This is... I'd just like to make a few comments. I think in doing the RAD, postponing the RAD conversion just makes it a little simpler. We still have a phenomenally large capital stack.
Yes, we do.
Like, less complicated. We have a very good team in place to handle this, a long-term owner.
Mm-hmm.
They know the building well.
Yep.
And they work together as a team. So it's a complicated transaction, but a very worthwhile one, and as a committee, we definitely approve of it.
Thank you, Kevin. Leanne, did you have a question?
I did have a question, and this is not to discredit the historic work of this agency, because as Kevin mentioned, they're excellent and they know this property well. But I pulled the preliminary approval from February and noticed on there that the rate then was 4.75% on a smaller loan than they're now proposing to take, including more permanent debt. And I assume that this has happened, but is that increase affordable both on the rate and the principal side for this agency to afford? Yeah.
So we obviously, like any other, we have underwritten this and done it in a conservative manner to make sure that, as you say, your concerns that they're able to financially sustain this over the course of time, and it does come out. The debt service coverage is 1.4 in year one and 1.3 at year 15. So because of the subsidy, it's a very healthy property in terms of its cash flow, and we don't expect any problems with that. Good question.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to note, sometimes contrary to public opinion, we have very successful partners in the center of Newport here, serving a very vulnerable population and continuing to do so successfully, both through shelter and housing. And it's really, it takes sometimes courage from our local partners and really the partnership of Rhode Island Housing, the state, to make all these things work. So I really appreciate that. And then just to piggyback on Leanne's comment, it really goes to show, you know, how the urgency that we have to close some of these projects, and the sooner we close them and lock in construction costs and everything else through one sweep of funding available, the more favorable the terms generally will be. I really look forward just to this rehabilitation, and I've visited the site multiple times, and it's really a great project.
Thank you, Josh. Anyone else? Chat, what I'd like Corinne to do is to conduct a vote on the motion, please.
Certainly. This is Corey speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for 50 Washington Square in Newport as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again, and with that, I'd like to introduce board action number 6, which is a firm approval for the residents at Riverside Square in East Providence. James will present on board action number 6.
Thank you. Good morning. James Comer again. This request for action is for the firm approval of a taxable first mortgage in an amount not to exceed $725,000, a home program loan in the amount of $1.885 million, and a housing trust fund program loan in the amount of $515,000 for the residences at Riverside Square in East Providence. The developer is One Neighborhood Builders, and this project will be the construction of 16 new one- and two-bedroom units that will revitalize a blighted property that's adjacent to the East Bay bike path that's been vacant for many years. These units, all 16 units, will provide housing for households with incomes between 30 and 80% of area median income. Three of the units will be set aside for youth aging out of foster care in coordination with Foster Forward Youth Initiative. Since the preliminary approval of the soft loans in 2021, site engineering and plans have been completed, contracted pricing has been updated, there has been a construction cost increase, but that's been accounted for in the underwriting. The project has previously received approval of BHRI, Home, HTF, and Rhode Island Rebounds production funds. We're seeking approval for the first mortgage, home loan, and housing trust fund loan for the residences at Riverside Square. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, James. It's Jim Thorson again. I'd like to request a motion to approve board action number 6, and please state your name.
This is Kevin Orth. I vote to, I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Kevin. Do I have a second?
Second. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. It's time for discussion. Kevin, do you have comments?
I think that the big one, obviously, is the increase in construction costs here. James could probably speak to this better than I, but we mentioned in credit committee that this, in addition to just general cost increases in the industry, there was some environmental issues, I think, that had to be overcome and some site issues. Obviously, it's a very small development. It's hard to spread those costs out. Anything else?
Exactly. No, I would say despite the increase, it's still coming in at $363,000 per unit, so it's well within the cost guidelines. And you're exactly right, Kevin. We're seeing material and labor cost escalation across the board. In this case, there were some site issues, and, you know, with 16 units, there's no economy of scale.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Kevin. Other questions or comments for discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Corinne to conduct a vote on the motion.
Yes. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for the residences at Riverside Square in East Providence as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved. Thank you.
And thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. This brings us to board action number 7, which is the firm approval of financing for Riverside Landing in Coventry. James Comer will take us through board action number 7.
I will indeed. Thank you. This is James Comer again. This request for action is for firm approval of first mortgage in an amount not to exceed $165,000 for Riverside Landing in Coventry. The developer is Coventry Housing Associates, which is a nonprofit affiliate of the Coventry Housing Authority. Firm approval will support the adaptive reuse of two structures located along the Patuxent River that will provide 6 townhouse-style two-bedroom units and 2 single-level two-bedroom units. All units will be income-restricted to households earning less than 50% of area median income. Additional financing from BHRI and the Rhode Island Rebounds Production Fund program were approved this past June, and this has been a project that has been long in coming. It's had a long history. It was originally purchased over 10 years ago by Omni Development and since been purchased by Coventry Housing Associates. It was stalled for a number of years because of floodplain issues. They've since redrawn the flood map, so it's no longer in a floodplain, which has allowed the development to proceed. We're just requesting firm approval of the mortgage for $165,000. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, James. This is Jim Thorson again. I'd like to request a motion to approve board action number 7. Please state your name.
So moved. Kevin Worth.
Thank you, Kevin. Do I have a second?
Second. Steve.
Thank you, Steve. With that, I've opened it up for discussions, comments, or questions.
Just a quick comment on it's just really good to see, you know, between this project and the previous project, new affordable housing is coming online. And so I'd just like to highlight that. It's really good to see.
Thank you, Steve. Other comments or questions?
So just looking at the capital stack, this is Josh. Looking at the capital stack, we have about $386,000 per unit in soft debt of the state. I was just wondering, for the adaptive reuse, how the costs compare generally with new construction and the considerations in that?
In terms of the construction cost, is that what you're asking?
Yeah. So to do like a full, you know,
so
why we sometimes adaptively reuse versus, say, demolish and then build new.
Sure. And I think that's a, you know, not to give you an evasive answer, it's a project-by-project consideration. It depends on the specific characteristics of the site and what can be done with it. In this case, I think the architectural and engineering team determined that it was worthwhile to do that and would be more cost-effective to do that. You know, again, as with the previous project, this comes out a little bit more expensive on a per-unit basis simply because it's 8 units, and, you know, you just don't get any economy with that, and we're obviously in a tight construction market. But I think anytime somebody acquires a property, and, you know, we certainly see this through the site acquisition program, there is that consideration of what's the program going to be? Are we going to demolish it and start fresh, or are these buildings worth saving? And in this case, a couple of different developers have decided that the buildings are worth saving.
Yeah, and I think it's an evaluation of the structural character of the buildings, how it fits in with the surrounding neighborhood. This particular property is sandwiched between two historic mill redevelopment properties, so there's some benefit in, however ugly the structures might be right now, I think there's some benefit in keeping that, and it's probably a cost savings for Coventry by doing that.
Thanks. There's been, in this case, but there's always a policy consideration of what we're saving in terms of the historic value of the properties. And it seems like a lot of these discussions fall back again to this main point of economies of scale and how we can think about achieving better economies of scale, whether it's through larger projects, especially as the SOS debt that the state is putting in has increased through the SFRF funding.
How much a question? But besides, it's more of a project.
Time.
Not according
to it doesn't come up.
That's what matters.
With that, Corinne, could you please conduct a vote on the matter?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for Riverside Landing in Coventry, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. With a unanimous vote, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, introducing board action number 8, which is approval of Healthy Housing, Healthy Communities Consulting Services. And Jessica Mowry, our Assistant Director of Leased Housing and Rental Services, will present on board action number 8. Jessica.
Thank you, Thorson. Good morning. This is Jessica Mowry. This request for action is for approval to engage a consultant to provide project management services for the Healthy Housing, Healthy Communities Initiative. As you may recall, in May of 2022, Rhode Island Housing received an award of $150,000 by the National Council of State Housing Finance Agencies in partnership with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for planning and technical assistance to identify partnerships and other innovative approaches to align healthcare investments with affordable housing. Known as the H3C Initiative, the planning effort will culminate in a housing, health, and equity partnership plan. To support the process, Rhode Island Housing issued a request for proposal seeking consultants to conduct project management and planning services in coordination with Rhode Island Housing staff. Rhode Island Housing received 4 proposals, and a committee consisting of Rhode Island Housing staff from the Leased Housing and Rental Services Division and the Government Relations team reviewed and scored each proposal. The highest scoring proposal was submitted by HCH Enterprises, LLC. HCH is a Rhode Island firm specializing in public sector consulting, workforce agility, and managed services. Of particular interest to staff was the firm's extensive experience with Medicaid and Rhode Island Health Equity Zone model, as well as stakeholder engagement. This engagement is expected to begin October 31st, 2022, and continue through December 31st, 2022. At this time, staff requests the approval of the resolution set forth before you in this request for action, which authorizes funding for consulting services in the amount of $60,000 to support the H3C initiative.
Thank you, Jessica. It's Jim Thorson again. Right now, I'd like to call for a motion to approve board action number 8. Please state your name.
This is Steve. I'll make a motion to approve.
Josh, second the motion.
Second by Josh. Any discussion on this?
This is Leanne. I have a question because I'm also participating in the work that UHHS and Blue Meridian and One are doing about scaling HESAs, and not sure how closely this team has worked on that, but I wondered if they're similar. So if there's an overlap or discussions with that team about how this work will fit in and complement what they're doing as opposed to being redundant, because they're also doing a whole planning process about how to scale HESAs. And
I don't think it'll be redundant. We haven't had that discussion, but I think it's a nice thing that I'll follow up on. And I wasn't aware of the efforts to scale the HES. I think this probably fits in as a component of that, because as you know, the HESs are large community-based and community-driven efforts that include more efforts around social determinants of health, not just housing.
Yep.
So I could see this as a nice complement to that.
If I could just add to that, the model that Jen is employing in terms of partnering with the Providence Community Health Center to keep people housed is a model we would love to replicate.
Yeah.
So I think many of the initiatives that we look at under this new plan would include what's coming out of Jen's work.
And I had one more question just because I have a little trouble reading this and understanding, which is my own reading comprehension problem. But so the first approximately third of this grant is being used for this planning phase, and then is it presumed that the rest will be used to hire a different team or this team for an extended scope of work to actually write the plan? Or I mean, is it a step in the middle?
No, I guess I don't understand.
So the grant was for $150,000,
yeah,
and $60,000 is going to be used for project management and planning.
Right.
What do you anticipate the rest of the budget of that grant being for, to actually write the plan?
To write the plan and to pay for staff time.
Okay. And so do you also anticipate bringing on additional consultant assistance to write the plan?
No, that, okay, that is available in the scope of work for this consultant too.
Got it.
So they will work in tandem with Rhode Island Housing staff.
Other comments or questions?
Yeah, so just to clarify that point, this is how much is this? Is $60,000 and the total grant was
$250,000.
No, it's $150,000. So the rest is for Rhode Island Housing staff as admin fees to support the work. Okay. The other thing, just to work, is I've been working with EOHHS and others on the HES and DOH. Similar criticism that our office often gets is that the way we address homelessness is so fragmented in the state. And I think for that reason, as Leanne was saying, it's really important that we are coordinating these efforts with the Department of Housing, given the $6.5 million that we're getting a year over the next 3 years to do homelessness assistance, and coordinating that work with the HESs as opposed to duplicating work, and even thinking how this fits into the statewide housing plan that my office is tasked in developing will go a long way as we share these common objectives of how to address both homelessness and housing instability through the work of probably half a dozen or so agencies at the state level. So that's incredibly important work, and I'm glad to see that Rhode Island Housing has an active role in that, and just we should all make sure that we're not duplicating and that it's additive in that context.
Very well, thank you. Other comments or questions? Hearing none, I would ask Corinne to conduct a vote on the matter.
Of approval of the engagement of HCH Enterprises LLC to provide healthy housing, healthy communities consulting services, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With another unanimous vote, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson. There being no further business, I'd like to request a motion to adjourn. Please state your name.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Corinne, would you please conduct a vote?
All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson. The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board is now adjourned. It is 10:20 a.m. Thank you for your participation, and thank you for your interest to our community.